chapter 33. Brief reminder about the previous chapter. There in chapter 32 is an account of, you might recall, of 2.5 tribes of the nation of Israel desiring to remain on the side of the Jordan River that they are presently located, which is on the east side, just above Moab, present-day Jordan, we would think of. They wanted to remain where they are, and because, very practical reason, because it was a place for cattle, and they had cattle. So it makes sense. The 2.5 tribes are the tribe of Reuben and Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh. And the other half of Manasseh is going to end up having land on the other side of the Jordan River. Now, after it was determined that their request to remain on the east side of the Jordan River, that it was not an act of rebellion, once that was determined, then there was a conditional agreement made. As long as they helped their brethren take possession of land on the other side of the Jordan River, they may remain here. Otherwise, if they fail to keep this agreement, they must take possession among their brethren in the land of Canaan. So Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh were given time to rebuild the pens for the livestock and the villages where their families, their wives, their children were going to remain, which had been destroyed when they had come into the land there and warred against the Amorites. You might remember some of those things. In these places, after they've done this, there was probably a space of a couple of months' time. In these places, they will leave a sufficient force to defend their interests, their family and property there. And the other warriors will go over with their brethren over the Jordan River and help their brethren take possession of that land, the land of Canaan. Now, the chapter ends by giving a brief description of that area where the 2.5 tribes will settle. And you can see that from verses 39 through to the end of the chapter. And we do know for a fact that this was accomplished, that they kept their word, and they eventually were allowed to go back. And we read that at the end of the chapter, I believe. Yeah, Joshua chapter 22, verses 1 through 9 is an account of that. Now, in this chapter, we have a record of the 42 camps that Israel set up along the way as a sojourn to the land of Canaan. You'll see that up there, 42, probably in the heading of your Bible. I don't remember actually reading that. It probably is listed somewhere. We'll probably find it in Deuteronomy. But to make sure I did go through and count these, I want to make sure that this is correct. Now, begin reading at verse 1. These are the journeys of the children of Israel which went forth out of the land of Egypt with their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron. We're going all the way back to the beginning. It's an historical account of Israel's travels under Moses and Aaron, and the Lord commanded him to keep this record. And Moses wrote their goings out according to their journeys by the commandment. See it? He was commanded to do it, so he did that, and here's the account of it. And these are their journeys according to their goings out. This is how they proceeded. And they departed from Ramesses in the first month. And you'll see this. First of all, we want to remember some things. Review. It's just what this chapter is about. In Genesis chapter 47, verse 11, we'll remember how the children of Israel came to possess the land where they were in Egypt, came out of Ramesses. And there it says, and Joseph placed his father, who was Jacob, and his brethren, and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh commanded. We see that. And then when they came out in Exodus chapter 12, verse 37, the children of Israel journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth. And we're going to read that. About how many? 600,000 on foot that were men besides children. So there was a good number. Could have been potentially over 1 million people. Now, so they did this. They departed from Ramesses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month. On the morrow after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with an high hand in the sight of or before the eyes of the Egyptians. You remember that it was the evening of Passover was on the 14th day, the 10th of the month, first month of Abib, they had separated a lamb. And then on the 14th day, they slew it and they took that blood and applied it to the doorposts, both of those, and the post above the door that's called also a lintel. That was where the blood was applied. Then on the 15th day, then on the next day, the 15th day would be the beginning of what we now know as the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And so they were departing on that day. They took their kneading troughs. The bread was not finished. It was unleavened and they left. For the Egyptians buried all their firstborn, which the Lord had smitten among them. Notice this phrase, statement. Upon their gods also the Lord executed judgments. And what that says, if we say it the way we would normally, also the Lord executed judgments upon their gods. Now that's the word Elohim. And that's referring to the princes, the leaders in the land of Egypt. He had executed judgment upon those princes. And the Lord, as you remember, spared Israel's firstborn from this judgment because they had taken that hyssop, dipped it in the blood of that slain lamb on Passover evening and applied it to the doorpost and the lintel. And the destroying angel passed over them in their houses. But it wasn't so for the firstborn in Egypt. Now, verse 5, and the children of Israel removed from Ramesses and pitched in Succoth, meaning the place of booths. And here's the place where Israel erected their first booths, or a cover over them to provide for them shelters. And later the Lord will institute a feast called the Feast of Tabernacles. It's the Feast of Booths. Now, in Leviticus chapter 23, verse 40, we just want to remember this. When they're commanded to observe this feast, you'll see how these booths were made. We think of tents like we might today, but think of it like this. Ye shall take you on the first day the boughs, or boughs, of goodly trees, branches of palm trees, or boughs of thick trees, and willows of the brook, and ye shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. And they would do this. So they gathered the branches of stuff and made booths like they did then. Verse 42 of that same chapter, ye shall dwell in booths 7 days. The Feast of Tabernacles. All that are Israelites born shall dwell in booths. That, expressing the purpose for doing this, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Now, it's something interesting. They actually never did this, observe this feast. Until as late as Nehemiah, and there you would have that. Nehemiah 8, verse 17 says so. So, because they dwelt in booths, they called it the place of booths. Verse 6, and they departed from Succoth and pitched in Etham, which is in the edge of the wilderness. And it does appear that this place, it's actually a wilderness area, is on both sides of the Red Sea. And they removed from Etham, and it says here, and turned again to Pi-Hiroth. It is the word for returned. Now, there's what's going on here is interesting. To say they returned or turned again to Pi-Hahiroth appears to mean that they headed in that direction before and then turned away, and now the Lord would have them turn back to it. And there's a reason. The Lord is directing them. And it's something like we even read in Thessalonians, believe it or not. It's so that the Lord will deceive Pharaoh in order to bring about his end or destruction, the destruction of his entire army. In Exodus chapter 14, verses 1 through 3, is an account of that. That is exactly what took place. The Lord spake to Moses, saying, "Speak unto the children of Israel that they turn back." Back is the idea, and back is the idea, and encamp before Pi-Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, over against Baal the Zephon, before it shall ye encamp by the sea, for Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel that they're entangled in the land. They don't know where they're going. So it looks to him like they're confused. The Lord did that on purpose, that the wilderness has shut them in. So they turned again to Pi-Hahiroth, however you say that, which is before Baal Zephon. And they pitched before Migdol. In Exodus 14, verse 9, the Egyptians pursued after them all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them encamping by the sea beside Pi-Hahiroth before Baal Zephon. Verse 8, and they departed from this place, from before Pi-Hahiroth, and passed through them. This is where they did it. Passed through the midst of the sea, the Red Sea, into the wilderness, still of Etham, and went 3 days' journey into the wilderness of Etham, and pitched in Marah, the place of bitterness. In Exodus chapter 15, we will read the wilderness of Etham on the east side of the Red Sea might be the same as the wilderness of Shur, on the west side, to the east side. In Exodus 15, verse 22, so Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur. Remember, Etham and this place appears to be the same, on the eastern side of the Red Sea. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. So you have the name, bitter, Marah. Therefore, the name was called Marah. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, and they went through these things. So some terrible things took place. And they removed from Marah and came unto Elam. Elam is the place of palm trees, and so it says. And in Elam were 12 fountains or wells of water, and 70 palm trees, and they pitched there. In Exodus 15:27, they came to Elam, where were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the waters. That must have been refreshing to them. It was like an oasis there as they had gone out. And so they removed from Elam and encamped by the Red Sea. And they removed from the Red Sea and encamped in the wilderness of Sin. And they took their journey out of the wilderness of Sin and encamped in Dophka, a place of cattle driving. And they departed from Dophka and encamped in Elush. Now Israel came into the wilderness of Sin, which is an area located between Elam and Sinai. And they arrived here on the 15th day of the second month, so a month later after they left Ramesses. And it's somewhere in this area that Israel murmured against the Lord. And in this area, what the Lord did, we were dying for hunger. He gave them manna from heaven. In Exodus chapter 16, verse 1. And they took their journey from Elam. And all the congregation of the children of Israel came into the wilderness, unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after departing out of the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against the Lord, murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. And the Lord said to Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. So that happens here, verse 14. They removed from Alush and encamped at Rephidim, where was no water for the people to drink. So this is the place called Massah and Meribah, temptation and chiding. Or it's also referred to as Kadesh Meribah. Here Moses is commanded to smite the rock, and water shall come out that the people may drink, in Exodus 17, 1 through 7. And also here, Amalek fought against Israel. And this is the battle that you might remember, where Aaron and Hur were on both sides of Aaron, and they held his arms long as Moses' hands were held up. The children of Israel were defeating the Amalekites. But when they came down, they began to lose. And so they held them up until the evening. It was quite a battle. You might remember that. Same chapter, Exodus 17. And they departed from Rephidim and pitched in the wilderness of Sinai. 3 months later, they're actually in the fourth month of the calendar. And they removed from the desert of Sinai. And this is the point where in our studies, when they did that, they were all ordered into their camps, and they were appointed their places. All the camps had their four major camps, three tribes within each of those camps. Aaron was ordered. The Levites were all ordered. And then they were told how to proceed forward into these, it looks to me like ranks, large ranks of people, with Israelites and then the Levites, Israelites, Levites, and so forth. They were well ordered by the Lord at this place. So they moved from the desert of Sinai, where they had received the law and such, and pitched at Kibroth Hataavah, the place of the graves of lust. And here, the mixed multitude despised the what? The manna. The manna which the Lord had provided them from heaven. And for this, he gave them quail for 30 days. And they ate to the full. But while the flesh was yet between their teeth, ere it was chewed, the wrath of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord smote the people with a very great plague. In Numbers 11:33, some of the things we just read about. And that's why they called this place Kibroth Hataavah. And they departed from Kibroth Hataavah and encamped at Hazeroth. Numbers 11:35, the people journeyed from Kibroth Hataavah unto Hazeroth and abode there. It was at this place that Miriam and Aaron murmured against Moses because he married an Ethiopian woman, and they got into some serious trouble. She was smitten with leprosy and caused at least to abide outside the camp for 7 days until she was purified from it. And then they set forward again from Hazeroth. There that took place. They departed from Hazeroth, entering into the wilderness or desert of Paran, and pitched in Rithmah, a place of a broom. And they departed from Rithmah and pitched at Rimmon Perez. Its name is a place of the breach of pomegranates. I don't know exactly what's going on, but it's interesting. And when you think about it, maybe in the light of fruit, we're going to touch on something about that in just a minute. In all of these, they departed from Rimmon Perez and pitched in Libna, a place of whiteness. And they removed from Libna and pitched in Rissa, a heap of ruins. And they journeyed from Rissa, pitched in Kehel Letha, a place of an assembly. And they went from Kehel Letha and pitched in Mount Shafer, a place, a beautiful place. And they removed from Mount Shafer and encamped in Hereda. a place of terror. Now, these things are what you can discover when you look up the names, particularly the verbs or nouns that are like this. You can do that. And they removed from Machiloth and they capped at Tahath, a place of depression or humility. And they departed from Tahath and pitched at Terah. And they removed from Terah and pitched in Mithkah. And they went from Mithkah and pitched in Hasmona. And they departed from Hasmona and encamped at Moseroth. And they departed from Moseroth and pitched in Benajaikon. Is related to the sons of Jaakim, the sons of intelligence. And they removed from this place and encamped at Hor Hagidot. And I tried my best to get this, and it's just a tongue-tire thing, but I think it's the same place as Gadgada, and so it's even difficult to say. So they went from this place and pitched in Jotbatha. It was here that the Levites were separated to their peculiar services around the tabernacle. Some were appointed to, after it was all covered up, they would bear the instruments and vessels and furniture. Others had other duties around carrying the hardware, and then another group was carrying the software. But that happened here in Jotbatha. And they removed from Jotbatha and encamped in Ebrona. And they departed from Ebrona and encamped at Ezion-Geber, a place of a backbone, a strong man. And they removed from Ezion-Geber and pitched in the wilderness of Zin, which is Kadesh. Kadesh, meaning an holy place. It's Kadesh Meribah, strife, contention, the place of the strife at Kadesh. Here it is where Miriam died. In Numbers 20, verse 1, then came the children of Israel, even a whole congregation, into the desert of Zin in the first month, and the people abode in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. Because there was no water, the people gathered themselves against Moses and Aaron and chode with him. And here Moses, it was here where Moses spoke unadvisedly with his lips and failed to sanctify the Lord before the people. And because of this, at this place when he did this, he smote the rock twice. Because of this, they would not come. He would not be leading them into the land of Canaan, and the several scriptures for that. And they removed from this place, Kadesh, this holy place, Kadesh Meribah, and came to Mount Hor, pitched in Mount Hor, in the edge of the land of Edom. And Aaron the priest went up. Here he dies. He went up into Mount Hor, the place of a mountain, notable mountain, at the commandment of the Lord, and died there. In Deuteronomy 10, verse 6, and I believe Numbers also records that. That happened in the 40th year after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt in the first day of the fifth month. Very accurate information. And Aaron was 123 years old when he died in Mount Hor. Now, I don't remember. I do recall that Aaron is 3 years older than Moses. I'm not sure exactly how old, but Miriam is the oldest. I think there is something in the scriptures about that. In verse 40, King Arad, the Canaanite, which dwelt in the south in the land of Canaan, heard then at that time of the coming of the children of Israel. And in Numbers 21:1, we just read this a little while back. When King Arad the Canaanite, which dwelt in the south, heard tell that Israel came by the way of the spies, then he fought against Israel and took some of them prisoners. And Israel vowed a vow to the Lord and said, if thou wilt indeed deliver this people into my hand, then I will utterly destroy their cities. And the Lord hearkened to the voice of Israel and delivered them up. Delivered up the Canaanites, and they utterly destroyed them in their cities, and he called the name of that place Destruction, Hormah. And that's what that means. So, continuing, verse 41. They departed from Mount Hor by way of the Red Sea, Numbers 21:4, and pitched in Zalmona. And they departed from Zalmona, and by the way, Zalmona is the place where many died of the serpents, the fiery serpents. We read about Numbers 21, verses 5 and 6. Fiery serpents bit them. The Lord sent them, the judge's people. And they departed from Zalmona and pitched in Punon, place of distraction. And they departed from Punon, Numbers 21:10, same thing, and pitched in Oboth. And they departed from Oboth and pitched in Ijeabarim, in the border of Moab. And they departed from, you know, you kind of get the sense, as hard as it is to say this, Moses writing this, he shortens it. Ain. Instead of going through all that, just Ain. It's very obviously it's shortened for that name place. And they pitched in Dibon-Gad, and they removed from Dibon-Gad and encamped in Almon-Diblathaim. And they removed from Almon-Diblathaim and pitched in the mountains of Abiram. We read about that recently before Nebo. And it departed from the mountains of Abiram and pitched in the plains of Moab by Jordan near Jericho. And they pitched by Jordan from Beth Jeshimoth even unto Abel Shittim in the plains of Moab. So Moses recorded by the commandment of the Lord all the encampments. We don't know how long they stayed at each place, but it was for 40 years that they did it. All these different places, 42 places in their 40 years time from when they left Ramesses and came to the plains of Moab. Now, the nation of Israel came to so many places. If we were to, I've got this all here in front of me. If we were to briefly take all those place names, we might see a little bit of our own personal experience as we make our sojourn through this present wilderness experience. They began with dwelling in booths, and then they wandered. They came to a place with caverns and meadows. Immediately there was bitterness. And then they came to a place that was kind of like an oasis. Remember Elam? They had places of reversals. They had times where they were together. Then there were times when they were dry. They buried some because of their lusts. They came to places of courts and villages, to places swept like a broom. There was a breach of fruit bearing. They came to places of whiteness, pureness, to places where there were as if it was just nothing but ruins. Places of assemblies, to beautiful places, to terrifying places, to the congregation, to depression or humility, to turnings or wanderings, to sweet places, to fruitful places, to chastisements, places where they were chastened, to places where they were learning, to divisions, to places where there was an abundance of good water, to a passage over here, to a place where it seemed like they got a little bit of a backbone. Well, that says a lot. They came to places of holiness. They came to mountaintop experiences, to shadows and images, things that are fleeting, they understood, to distractions, to places where former passages that they had been lay in ruins, to places of an abundance of weeping, to an hiding place, to new passages, to an house of desolation. It corrupts. It's unregenerable, the old nature. Finally, to meadows of acacias, to incorruptibleness, abiding forever. I think that as poorly as it was, I think you get an idea of this for ourselves. This is interesting. If you take the time to dig just a little bit, you can have something like that. So I think it sounds familiar. It sure does to me. We're really not any different than they are we? Verse 50. And the Lord spake to Moses in the plains of Moab by Jordan near Jericho, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, When you're passed over Jordan in the land of Canaan, then ye shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you, before your face, and destroy all their pictures. It's kind of funny what people do with words sometimes. They say that it's wrong to have any kind of pictures at all. But that's not what he's talking about here. He's talking about pictures of the gods of the people that lived in this land. That's the whole idea now. Destroy all their pictures, literally the images of their gods. And destroy all their what? Molten images, the cast, melted forms of what? Their gods. And quite pluck down all their high places. Brother, I don't know if you take this rather in an unusual sense. You might consider taking down your high place that's down the road here. That's not what he's talking about at all. He's talking about the high places. You can read the rest of the scriptures. High places were places where the Gentiles had raised up these gods in these places. Similarly to this, I want to stop right here and read Exodus chapter 23, verse 24. Just a few verses here, and then we'll continue reading what they're to do. Why is this so important? Thou shalt not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do after their works, but thou shalt utterly overthrow them and quite break down their images. And you shall serve the Lord your God, and he shall bless thy bread and thy water. And I will take away sickness away from the midst of thee, verse 31, and I will set thy bounds from the Red Sea even unto the Sea of the Philistines. I believe it's Mediterranean. And from the desert unto the river, for I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand. And thou shalt drive them out before thee, and thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. Thou shalt not, they shall not dwell in thy land, lest they make thee sin against me. For if thou serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto thee. Verse 53 now. And ye shall dispossess, drive out the inhabitants of the land and dwell therein. For I have given you the land to possess it, and ye shall divide or distribute the land by lot for an inheritance among your families. And to the more, many, ye shall give the more, increase that, the inheritance. And to the fewer, ye shall give the less, diminish the inheritance. Every man's inheritance shall be in the place where his lot falleth. According to the tribes of your fathers, ye shall inherit. But if you will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those which ye let remain, you let them rest in the land with you. They shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and shall vex you in the land wherein you dwell. You know that I cannot tell. Obviously, we would know pricks in the eyes. We would think of a thorn, a splinter, some sort. But as far as I could tell, it has the idea of a thorny hedge. What used to look beautiful becomes a real problem to you. It's a real problem. A thorny hedge in your eyes. All the pleasantness of it leaves. Moreover, you know, it's like Lot in that beautiful land of Sodom. He saw it was beautiful. And he moved down that direction. But you know what happened? He was vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. It weren't so beautiful then, was it? What happens as a result if they fail to do this? They shall vex you in the land wherein you dwell. Moreover, in addition, it shall come to pass that I shall do unto you as I thought to do unto them. And that's exactly the history of the nation of Israel, driven from the land again and again and again and again. and again. They've been driven from the land to this time, but they're coming back. They'll be coming back. Look at Joshua chapter 23, verse 11. Joshua saying essentially the same thing to the children of Israel. They've taken the land. Take good heed, therefore, to yourselves that you love the Lord your God. Else, if you do in any wise, go back and cleave unto the remnant of these nations, even these that remain among you, and shall make marriages with them, and go in unto them, and they to you. Know of a certainty that the Lord your God will no more drive out any of these nations from before you, but they shall be snares and traps unto you, and scourges in your sides, and there it is, thorns in your eyes, until you perish from off this good land which the Lord your God hath given you. And behold, this day I'm going the way of all the earth. And you know that, and you know in all your hearts, you know this to be true, in all your souls, that not one thing has failed of all the good things which the Lord your God spake concerning you. All are come to pass unto you, and not one thing has failed thereof. Therefore, it shall come to pass that as all good things are come upon you, which the Lord your God promised you, so shall the Lord bring upon you all evil things until he have destroyed you from off this good land, which the Lord your God hath given you. Now, did the Lord say these things to Israel not knowing what they were going to do? Absolutely not. But yet there are some that profess Christ that would say that he didn't know, that he just reacts to the circumstances that come out. It's a sad thing. It's a terrible, terrible doctrine that would think such a thing. But no, he said these things before it came to pass to prove them and to judge them when they did turn away from the Lord. It's all there. Of course, the new all of it would be done. Their journey isn't so much different than ours. We would confess the same. How merciful he has been to our unrighteousnesses. We deserve no mercy from the Lord. And yet he sent his son to die for us. And he's faithful to chasten us, his children, and conform us, working us to be conformed to the image of his son. And that's what the Lord does in his people. That's what he's doing in it. In the end, Israel will be conformed. That people will be. There's a certain people he has in mind and is coming. But the same is happening to us. He's working the same in us. That's the lesson. Thank you for your attention.